welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's past. I'm Mark LeVonier. Coming up in this hour, Adventure, later on from a broadcast of Suspense from 1959. But right now, it's Jason and the Golden Fleece from June 7th, 1953 on NBC.
A load of coal upon my back, I sell my coal.
New Orleans waterfront is old and dirty and damp, but I like it here. I like the chant of the coal peddler as he plods past my bar on Bourbon Street. I like the call of the blackberry woman, who's still singing the same song she sang when pirates hid their loot at Jean Lafitte's blacksmith shop in the French Quarter. And I like the Mississippi, where a man and a boat can find a dream. Yeah, I like New Orleans. They call me Jason. I call my boat the Golden Fleece.
NBC presents Jason and the Golden Fleece, starring MacDonald Carey.
Kent Sherwood was the guy who discovered Linda Gale. She was working in a rodeo in Wyoming, where she was billed as the prettiest cowpuncher on the Western Plains. Sherwood cast her for a small part in a fast horse opera, and she stole the show from everybody, including the horses. Then there were 4 Academy Awards, a command performance in Buckingham Palace, a USO tour to every front in World War II, and a couple of things I can't remember. But I remember enough now to realize why I didn't recognize the name of Kent Sherwood. He married her. Sherwood's business manager and his public relations expert filled me in on a few other details of my place in the 800 block on Bourbon Street of the New Orleans French Quarter. They came to arrange a honeymoon cruise for Sherwood with another woman. I was playing the concertina in the corner, and Louis was behind the bar, and we didn't pay too much attention to them when they walked in. Later, I wished we'd listened a little closer to what they had to say, but it probably wouldn't have done much good. They really didn't know too much themselves about what went on in the mind of Kent Sherwood.
The girl's name is Felicia Romita, Jason. You have your bartender bring me a bourbon and milk.
Bourbon and milk?
Yeah, he's not supposed to drink, Jason. He figures the milk is good for his ulcers.
Oh. Louis.
Mama, Jason.
Just bring us over a bourbon and milk.
I better make it 2, huh? I'm having a little trouble with my stomach myself.
As I was saying, Jason, her name's Felicia Romito.
Yeah, look, Alan, you better tell him we're going to do something about that name, of course.
It's your department, Donovan.
Monsieur, do I understand correctly, bourbon and milk?
Well, you catch the way you read that, Alan. Look over that way for a minute, bartender, huh?
What?
That's it. Now look there, huh?
Pardon, monsieur.
Isn't that a great face, Alan?
Yeah, maybe. That accent. Ooh, nothing.
Here are your drinks, monsieur.
You know, I've been thinking about calling Felicia Schöner Storm. Now, just listen to that, Jason. Schöner Storm. You like that?
I'm a sailor. If you won't bother me at the wheel of the Fleece, I won't interfere with your naming of your actresses.
Yes, but do you like it?
What difference does it make?
Well, it makes all the difference in the world. You're the public, the great American public that's going to make a star out of this little girl. Now, look, Schöner Storm. You like it?
You fellows are planning to shove off in the morning. We'd better start talking about the cruise.
Now, look, Alan, it's a natural. You get the tie-in, reminds folks of Linda Gale. Now, that was a name that sang. You know what Linda means in Spanish. Pretty. Linda Gale. A pretty wind.
What's that got to do with Felicia?
Well, Sherwood's second great discovery. Schöner Storm. Schöner. That. You know what it means in German, don't you? Pretty. Pretty storm. You get it? Lovely, alluring, but dangerous, too. That's greater than Linda Gale.
What was her real name?
Who knows? Alberta something or other, I forget. But do you like this F.A. now? Look, does it sing for you? Tell me. Schöner Storm. Oh, Schöner means pretty in German, you know.
Felicia Romita's Italian.
So what?
Look, gentlemen, while Mr. and Mrs. Sherwood are gone on their honeymoon, you can find yourselves a quiet spot in the French Quarter and figure out a name for the bride.
Oh, we're going along, Jason.
Well, sure. Who ever heard of a honeymoon without a good publicity man?
Yeah, it's all right with me if it's all right with Sherwood, but four sounds like quite a crowd for a honeymoon.
Well, there'll be five altogether. We've got to have a photographer.
Naturally.
As a matter of fact, Jason, there'll be six.
Oh, now look, you're not bringing along that lousy secretary of yours, are you, Alan?
I was thinking of Linda.
I don't pretend to keep up with things in Hollywood too well, Alan, but I do know that Linda Gale's been dead for over a year.
Oh, yeah, I know, Jason, but it's still going to be pretty hard to keep her from going along on this cruise.
I charged that crack up to the talent of over-dramatizing a situation that seemed to be characteristic of the particular section of the motion picture world I was going to have aboard the Fleece. But when Louie and I stopped for breakfast at a little spot just a block from the canal the next morning before shoving off, I saw something that made me wonder. There was a dark-haired girl in a booth toward the back.
Yeah?
Well, it be, sailor.
Just this coffee for me.
Yeah. How about you?
A couple of fried eggs, over easy.
Two over easy.
Louie. You see that girl in the booth over there?
Me? But it is not polite to stare, Jason.
I can't help it.
She is a beautiful woman. There is no question of this. But even with the limited amount of attention I've given her, I've been able to determine that she's wearing a wedding ring.
Yeah.
And what is more, the gentleman seated beside her is obviously her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you not drink your coffee?
Go to the movies much, Louis.
Oui. But even after this experience, I find it possible to drink my coffee.
Remember a girl named Linda Gale?
Yeah?
Long, dark hair, big, wide, brown eyes, and...
These were not the details of Mademoiselle Gale's appearance that impressed me, Jason. But she's been dead for some time now.
I know. But look at that girl in the booth.
Huh?
Look at her.
Oui, now that you mention it, the resemblance is remarkable.
That's no resemblance, Louis. That's Linda Gale. The girl in the booth never noticed that I was watching her, and I watched her closely enough to be certain she wasn't a ghost. She kept her eyes on the man who, as Louis had so pointedly told me, was obviously her husband. They left before we'd finished, and I thought again about what Alan had said about the possibility of Linda Gale sailing with us on this cruise. But I was willing to accept Louis's explanation that the whole illusion was the result of my being up too early in the morning with too little sleep the night before. A half hour later, we jumped aboard the Fleece.
There is Monsieur Alain, the bourbon and milkman.
Yeah, he looks like you didn't mix in enough milk.
You all set, Jason?
Just about. Where's your friend Donovan?
My compartment. We slept here. Photographer, too.
And Monsieur and Madame Sherwood?
They came aboard a few minutes ago, I think. I heard someone.
How long ago?
Oh, 5-10 minutes. Why?
Nothing. You better light off the engines, Louis.
Oui, Jason. But before I do, perhaps Monsieur Allen would describe Madame Sherwood for Jason, huh?
Well, she looks just like Linda Gale. You remember her, don't you?
That is what I thought.
In other words, if you've seen one of Sherwood's wives, you've seen them all, huh?
You figure things out fast.
Oui, this Jason is a smart one.
Light off the engines, Louis. I'll check below.
Oui. And if you see any ghosts there, do not hesitate to call me.
Well, I'll get Sherwood and the girl and the photog up here. We better get a few shots of this.
Yeah. I guess you'd better.
Now, what's so funny?
Well, I was... just thinking you could use the same pictures you took of Sherwood's honeymoon with Linda Gale.
No, it wouldn't work at all. Sherwood took Linda to Hawaii. Same characters, but entirely different background.
Felicia looked even better aboard the Fleece than she had in the little restaurant. She had her black hair tied with a pink ribbon that matched a pleated blouse that would have looked expensive even without her inside it. Light blue pedal pushers, bobby socks, and saddle shoes completed the outfit. And if you get the idea from that detailed description that I looked her over pretty carefully, you're wrong. I looked her over very carefully. I looked at Sherwood, too. but only long enough to decide he didn't look happy enough for a guy on a honeymoon with a girl who looked like Felicia. And he wasn't.
Aren't we about ready, Jason?
We'll haul in the lines in a minute, Sherrod. I thought I'd give you time for your pictures.
I'd just like to get a couple with a photog on the dock, Kent, huh?
All right. Well, let's get it over with, Don.
All right. Get over on the dock, Chuck, will you?
Yeah, right.
What's the matter, Kent?
Nothing, Felicia. I'm just anxious to get started.
I brought a bottle of champagne in the French Quarter. Will you drink a toast with me?
Hey, that's great. Make like you're breaking the bottle over his head, honey.
No champagne, Felicia.
But, Kent,
here, give me that bottle.
No. Let her hold the bottle, Mrs.
Oh, Kent, you broke it.
Yes, I intended to. That's enough pictures.
But, Mr. Sherwood, I didn't even get this one.
I said that's enough.
You're the boss.
Jason.
Yes, sir.
Let's get underway immediately.
Right.
Kent, I'm sorry if I did anything wrong.
Never mind, Felicia, never mind. And don't cry.
All right. I'm sorry.
Cast off, Louis.
Felicia, stop.
Look, Kent, I don't get it.
I just don't want any more pictures, Donovan. Especially any with champagne bottles.
But we always used to get at least one shot like that and everything we took of Linda Gale.
There's one thing we'd better get straight in right now, Donovan. Felicia is not Linda Gale.
Sherwood's face was hard and stern as he said that, and he almost spit out the words. Felicia looked up at him, sad and bewildered. She hadn't recovered much by sundown. I was in the wheelhouse, and the fleece was cutting the river toward the gulf when she came topside.
Hello, Jason.
Hello yourself, whoever you are.
As of the moment, I'm still Felicia. I haven't talked to Mr. Donovan or Mr. Allen lately, though. Maybe changed by now.
Maybe I'm a little stupid, but I sort of like Felicia. It's, well, different.
Apparently, they don't want anything different.
You do look a lot like her. Back in that restaurant this morning, I thought I was seeing a ghost.
Yes, I know. It's a pretty night, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe your husband would like it.
Well, he didn't feel too well, Jason.
That's funny. From the way Donovan and Allen talked, I thought he'd be quite a sailor.
It isn't that. I wish I could talk to somebody about it.
I'd be willing to listen, but I'm afraid I don't know as much about him as our other passengers.
I can't talk to them. Anyway, I don't think they know him either. Maybe nobody does.
Nobody knows anybody else real well.
I guess Linda Gale did.
Maybe.
He must have loved her very much. Losing her must have hurt him more than I realized. I guess I shouldn't have married him so soon.
She's been dead more than a year.
Doesn't seem like it at all. I keep thinking she'll be coming back.
Did you ever meet her?
I was 15 years old and 1,000 miles away when she won her first Academy Award. I didn't get to Hollywood until just a few weeks before she died.
That's right. You were back in Wyoming.
Tacoma, Jason. Wyoming's where Linda was from.
Sorry.
It's all right. Everybody does it. Even Kent, I guess. I probably just caught him on the rebound. He must have thought he could find her over again with me.
You've got to expect to be compared to her, Felicia. You must have known that before you married him.
I'm getting used to it. But I'll never get used to it from Kent. I can't stand being compared every minute of my life to a woman who's dead and won't be buried.
If you don't mind my saying so, it doesn't look like you're doing too much to help him forget her.
What do you mean?
Well, I never knew her, but from what I saw of Linda Gale in the movies, I'd say you're doing everything you can to act just like her.
I'm all mixed up, Jason. I don't know how to act. I thought being like her was what Kent wanted, and I want to make him happy. I guess I just don't know.
Do you have any idea why that champagne bottle made him sore?
Probably reminded him of Linda. I remember way back in those days, they used to call her the champagne girl. Where I came from, a bottle of root beer or a chocolate milkshake was a big night for me. But I thought Kent would like it.
Why don't you try just being yourself?
I'd like to, Jason. But nobody will let me.
The little from Tacoma wanted to cry, but she just stood there beside me, looking down at the muddy water, until Louis came topside to relieve me at the wheel. I took her below to the galley for a cup of coffee, half and half, which was the closest thing to a chocolate milkshake we had aboard. Alan was there ahead of us, and he was having his coffee black.
You know, this stuff is hot enough to burn through the lining of my stomach. If I have any stomach left, I'd be sampling your bartender's work last night, Jason.
Louis mixed them the way you ordered them, Alan, bourbon and milk.
The only thing I can figure is he put in too much milk. What's doing, Felicia?
Not much, Mr. Allen. Where's Kent?
Compartment. You got any aspirin, Jason?
Two bottles up there in that locker. But the one on the left is for headaches you get from drinking milk.
All right. You know, I sure wish Sherwood would get off this boat kick or else quit getting married.
I'll get you a cup of coffee, Felicia.
I really ought to go to Kent.
Have a cup of coffee first. Okay.
How's the weather look, Jason?
Fine. Not a cloud in the sky.
That's good. Should have seen the storm we ran into on our way to Hawaii.
Alan, look. Felicia's a little upset.
It's all right, Jason. I'd like to hear about Kent's first honeymoon.
Hey, Alan. Alan, I think I got it. Now, look. See how this hits you. Bonnie Moore.
Mm-hmm.
M-O-O-R. Moore. No E on the end. You get it?
N-O, Donovan.
Oh, come on.
No E on the end.
Oh, come on. Look, Moore. Like the place on Wuthering Heights. Moody, sinister, exotic. And Bonnie, of course, means pretty in Scotch. Now, tell me, does that hit you?
Yeah, right in the pit of my stomach.
Cup of coffee, Donovan?
Oh, that the best you can do, Jason?
Sorry.
That's okay. I'll try a shot of it. Now, seriously, though, Alan, look, what do you think? Bonnie Moore. See? No E on the end.
I don't feel good enough to think. Besides, you just interrupted the start of some very pleasant reminiscing.
Huh? Like what?
The trip to Hawaii, you remember?
Huh? The honeymoon. Oh, great. Million laughs. Oh, Jason, you should have been on that one.
I was just telling you. You remember the storm?
Oh, brother, was I sick. Night before it hit, did I get loaded? And then that fire.
That must have been hilarious.
You should have seen it, Jason. We're out there in the middle of nowhere. About 3 days out, and we're all up on deck, hanging over the rail. And then we see the smoke.
Yeah, you thought it was a low cloud.
Yeah. Well, Linda, she's the only one that kept ahead. I don't know what would have happened if it hadn't been for Linda.
Where was the skipper?
Oh, Dad, was he blind. After that storm, so we found out we were headed for Alaska.
But the fire was the greatest. There was smoke and flames all over the place. And Linda, she puts the whole thing out.
You know, I made every paper in the country and the magazine cover with that story.
She was sensational. Oh, you remember she had this mink coat?
Yeah.
She smothered the flames with it?
Yeah. Do you know there was $5,500 in damage on the goat alone?
The coat wasn't even paid for.
Oh.
Yeah, Linda was terrific.
Oh, terrific. That bit was so good we used it in the next picture. Maybe you saw it, Jason. Flaming Sea. You remember?
I guess I missed that one.
I saw it.
Huh?
As you said, Mr. Allen, Linda Gale was terrific.
No offense, Felicia.
I think I'd better go to Kent.
I think I'd better go too, boys. Felicia. You feeling better?
I'm all right, Jason.
I'm sorry about this.
It's all right. I asked for it. Anyway, I like fires. We always went to see them in Tacoma.
Felicia, they're no fun to watch on a boat. No matter what Alan and Donovan think.
Why did you say that?
No special reason. I just don't want you getting any ideas aboard my boat.
Ideas like what?
Ideas like you've got. You may have seen a lot of fires in Tacoma, Felicia, but you've never seen one at sea, and you've never put one out.
Don't you think I could?
I don't know. But I don't want to watch you try. This time, there might not be a mink coat handy. She walked away toward her compartment to be with her husband, but he wasn't there. I found that out a few minutes later back on the fantail. I took my concertina back there to relax in the fishing chair in the quiet night. Sherwood came back to listen.
That's very nice, Jason. Very nice. You're very lucky to have something to be quiet with.
Quiet, Mrs. Chief.
So was loneliness.
Why did you marry him, Shirley?
She doesn't any more belong in this gang of yours than a Missouri school teacher.
Well, it's funny you said that. I was in love with a Missouri school teacher once. Yeah, back in the third grade.
You come from Missouri?
Nobody seems to be born in Hollywood, Jason. You fly there, maybe run there. But you're not born there.
Now, slack off a little, Sherwood. I've met a couple of pretty nice people from out there. I had a charter once for a director and his wife. They brought along a couple of actor friends. We had a nice, quiet cruise. Fine people.
Yeah, maybe you could be a fine person if you had someone you loved. Someone who loved you.
And just because you lost that someone you loved, you're going to louse up the life of a girl who might find someone she could love and love her.
What are you talking about?
You. You're Linda Gale. She's dead, Mr. Sherwood, and she's not coming back. No matter how many times you try to marry her memory, she's dead. She's not coming back, no matter how much you loved her.
Whatever gave you the idea I loved Linda Gale?
You married her?
She planned the whole thing. Yes, I was a big man in Hollywood. I could help her. That's all there was to it. She didn't love me.
But you loved her?
Linda Gale? I hated her.
We'd cut past the Delta and out into the Gulf while Sherwood and I were talking. But Sherwood hadn't changed as much as the scenery. He still had that stern, hungry look that I realized then, for the first time, reflected the disillusionment inside him. I left him there to think and walked forward into the wheelhouse.
Ah, Jason, you could not sleep, huh?
No, Louis. Thinking about our friends, Alan and Donovan.
Huh? Do you find this interesting?
In a morbid sort of way.
At least the sea is giving us no trouble.
I have the feeling that if those characters below wanted to, they could rustle up a storm.
I imagine that the Gulf of Mexico is a little out of their jurisdiction.
Well, maybe. But I'll still be glad when this cruise is over.
Well, they are paying us well, you know.
Yeah, and we're earning every penny of it. Hey, you smell something.
Only fresh air, which I will admit is somewhat of a novelty after the atmosphere of the French Quarter.
I'm serious. Don't you smell it?
No.
Louis, it's smoke.
Huh? You're right, Jason.
Look, it's coming out of the engine room. Slow to 1/3.
Who is it?
Jason! Jason, you smell smoke?
Yeah, Alan, just stay below. I'll take care of it.
Donovan! Donovan, wake up that port.
Keep him out of the way, too.
You kidding? We gotta get some pictures of this thing.
Jason, what's the matter?
Looks like a fire. She would stand clear.
Where's Felicia?
She was below the last time I saw her.
How do you think it started, Jason?
I'm not sure, Alan, but I've got a pretty good idea.
What do you mean?
You boys here were thoughtful enough to tell her about the trouble you had on your honeymoon to Hawaii. I'm afraid Felicia got the idea putting out a fire was part of the regular audition for being your wife.
Wait a minute. You mean she started it?
That doesn't matter now. Just let me this hatch. Stuck.
Here, let me help you.
You see if you can find her, Sherwood. I'll get this.
All right. Felicia?
Anything I can do, Jason?
I don't know, Alan. What part did they give you in the last fire?
No time for smart talk. Now, come on.
I didn't know you guys had time for anything else.
Will you tell me what I can do?
Get at it from below. This won't come open.
Jason, wait. Will you tell me what I can do?
Just take notes. You may be able to use this bit in Felicia's first picture. Donovan and the photographer were topside by then, and I had to fight my way through them to get into the wheelhouse.
How'd it start, Jason?
Is it bad, Jason?
It doesn't look good, Louis. Cut the engines and stand by topside with a CO2 extinguisher.
Oui, Jason.
I practically ripped open the after companionway door leading to the engine room space. Smoke came rolling out into the companionway, and inside I saw the bright orange glare that meant things were worse than I figured. I grabbed an extinguisher off the bulkhead just inside the opening and worked my way on my hands and knees. I was trying to spot the base of the fire. It was hard to see in the center of that billowing smoke. I heard Sherwood first, coughing and spitting as his lungs choked in the thick, oily smoke. And then I saw Felicia. She was right in the center of the flaming engine room, standing there with her hands hanging limply by her side. She looked helpless and scared. Whatever she'd been trying to do to stop the fire, she'd given up. And it wasn't important to me or anybody else now whether she'd started it. I grabbed her by the arms and jerked her out from between the diesel engines. I shoved her behind me and then brought the fire extinguisher up where I could get it working.
I couldn't do it, Kent.
So never mind, Felicia, never mind. Just keep out of the way now. Here, give me that thing, Jason.
Look out, Sherwood.
I said give it to me.
All right, Sherwood. As long as you've got it, hit that stream right into the base of the fire.
Yes, yes, I know what I'm doing.
Well, then start pouring and pouring fast. We've got to stop it before it gets to that gasoline drum.
Here goes.
That's it, Sherwood. Keep it on those rags there. That's where our fire started.
Jason, I'm sorry. I didn't know it would make all this trouble.
I'll talk to you later.
There. That about got it, Jason.
A little more over there.
Yeah.
Now I'll get this overhead hatch open so we can take care of the finishing touches.
Ooh. Do you mind if I... Mind if I go to my compartment, Jason?
Well, go ahead, Shirley. You've earned a rest.
May I go with you, Kent?
Oh, sure. If you want to.
I started the fire, Kent. I heard Mr. Allen and Mr. Donovan talking about that time on the cruise to Hawaii, how Linda Gale put out the fire. But I couldn't do it, Kent. Thank you for helping me.
I'm glad I was able to help, Felicia.
Linda Gale wouldn't have needed any help, would she?
No, Felicia. She wouldn't have needed any. But she's dead now. She can't bother either of us anymore.
No, Kent. I don't think she can.
If it weren't so tragic, it'd almost be funny, the way two people go out looking for the Golden Fleece in two different directions, like Felicia and Sherwood, when they could find it so much more quickly if they looked in the same place, together.
A load of gold upon my back, I sell my food.
The coal peddler will always be around with his lonesome chant, and the song of the Blackberry Woman will be heard in New Orleans till the end of time. Next week, we'll be sailing from here again, searching with somebody new. We'd like you to be with us aboard the Golden Fleece.
Jason and the Golden Fleece, starring MacDonald Carey with Bill Conrad as Louis DeMaul, is written by Cleve Herman and Herb Ellis and directed by Arthur Jacobson. Portions transcribed. Original music is composed and conducted by Frank Worth. Also heard tonight were Stacey Harris as Frank Allen, Tony Barrett as Dick Donovan, Charlotte Lawrence as Felicia, Bill Boucher as Kent Sherwood, and John Larch as the photographer. Jason and the Golden Fleece is heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. A lot of people go on vacation in June. The highways are pretty crowded. It's a good idea to take it easy. Excess speed is one of the major causes of automobile accidents. That's what America's professional truck drivers are taught. That's why they drive ahead of themselves. You drive ahead of yourself, too. Remember, speed is the number one killer on the road. This afternoon, it's Adventure with Counter Spy on NBC.
Jason and the Golden Fleece, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of June, 1953 on NBC. That program would fold the following month on NBC after enjoying Wednesday nights at 10 on the network for about 9 months. You're listening to an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark LeFounier. And now another adventure story with a charter boat captain. It's Moonlight Sail, the tale for suspense. First heard on CBS on December 27th, 1959.
The
The ancient Romans called the Mediterranean Mare Nostrum, our sea. For the past several years, I've made it my sea, up to a point. At least there isn't a port between Gibraltar and the Suez Canal I haven't been in and out of without the knowledge of the harbor master. I was once a gob in the U.S. Navy, and the craft I skipper was once a PT boat in the U.S. Navy. Now, we can both be had for a price.
If the price is right.
That's Marius, my first mate and crew. I signed him on one night in a dive in Marseille after I'd come between him and a crazy Moroccan who wanted to give him a facelift with the broken end of a wine bottle. Marius may have a rather carefree code of ethics, but I know I can count on his loyalty, so long as I pay him regularly. There the bells up on the Souquet, the old section of canals. The sun is dipping toward the mountains of the Esterel, and another day is drawing to a close on the glamorous and expensive French Riviera, where the pickings have been precariously lean for the cruiser Mockingbird and its men.
Bonjour, monsieur.
Ah, but who knows? Maybe this is our pigeon.
May I come aboard?
Sure. What can I do for you?
It is said that your boat is for hire.
That's right.
And are you free for this evening?
Yes, I am.
Good, then I shall engage you.
For what?
Oh, just a boat ride, a moonlight sail.
Where?
Oh, just out and back.
Why?
Monsieur, am I engaging you, or are you engaging me?
I like to know what I'm getting into, that's all.
Oh, it is merely, as I say, monsieur, a moonlight sail. A young lady whose capitulation is as yet not complete.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm not sure the Mockingbird is very well rigged for your purpose.
She looks adequate.
Okay. What time?
Say 8 o'clock. You know the Villa Mouette on Cap d'Antibes?
The big place out by Eden Rock that rich American dame leased for the summer?
Si, sir.
I'll be there.
Oh, one thing more, monsieur.
Yes?
How much?
How long is it going to take you?
Who knows? 2 hours, 3 hours. One cannot put a time limit on these matters.
Yeah, I know. Say 10,000 francs for the evening.
Agreed, monsieur. At 8 o'clock, then?
At 8 o'clock.
Ah, Steve, I do not like it.
But, my friend, a buck is a buck. Or, as we say in France, 400 francs is 400 francs. Make fast that bow line, Marius.
I have it, mon capitaine.
Well, monsieur le capitaine, you're right on time.
Part of our service, monsieur. Say, you never told me your name.
Oh, forgive me. It is Effroyer. Jacques Effroyer. And this is Mademoiselle Adèle.
Well, glad to have you aboard, Miss Adèle.
Thank you, Captain.
Any special place you wanted to go, Monsieur Effroyer?
Yes. Head her straight south.
South?
Yes. To Africa.
I was beginning to dislike this puny little Frenchman with the shifty eyes, but I didn't give him any argument. He was paying for the evening, and if he wanted to ride toward Africa, I'd head south for a little while. The girl sat huddled on one side of the foredeck, her back turned to the Frenchman, and he leaned against the rail, watching her, tense, like a black cat ready to pounce. Then, for a moment, he averted his gaze as he turned into the wind to light a cigarette. Adèle leaped to her feet, ran astern, and clambered into the wheelhouse.
Captain, where are you taking me? Where's Chuck? Is he all right?
Chuck? Who's Chuck?
My fiancé. Is he badly hurt?
I'm sorry. I don't know what you're talking about, lady.
You must not let yourself get so upset.
But I've got to know, and you won't tell me anything.
You know everything in good time. And anyway, the capitaine knows nothing. Now, come along with me.
But this is...
I said come with me. We are nearing our destination.
With a yank that nearly pulled her arm from its socket, he hauled Adèle out of the wheelhouse and back forward. Marius looked at me and shrugged.
C'est la vie, et ce n'est pas l'amour. You know what I think, Steve?
Not until you tell me.
This fellow is not in love with this girl.
No.
Yes.
Well, what are you going to do?
Yes, but who is this Chuck who is so badly hurt? And what is this destination this fellow said we were approaching?
Who knows? It's his boat ride. He paid for it.
Yes, but Steve, I'd like to...
No! Captain, help me!
Steve, look, he's pushing her overboard.
I made it to the foredeck
deck just in time to grab the struggling girl before she went over the side. She was too shaken to speak, but the Frenchman wasn't tongue-tied.
Oh, thank you, Captain. Thank you. She was trying to throw herself overboard. I struggled to prevent her, but she was too strong for me. If it had not been for you...
Save it. I saw how it happened. Oh, get aft to the wheelhouse. I want you where I can keep my eye on you. Both of you.
Thank you, Captain. You're trying to push me overboard.
I know. Marius?
We will, Capitan.
Swing her around. We're going in.
Just sweet, my Capitan.
All ahead, flank.
All ahead, flank.
The sooner I drop this cargo, the happier I'll be.
Nobody said anything for the next few minutes. The girl was too shaken to talk, and the Frenchman was figuring his next move. Marius held the wheel, driving the Mockingbird across the moon-drenched water at top speed. And I stood by to prevent further mayhem.
Captain, I feel I owe you an explanation.
You don't owe me anything but 10,000 francs for the evening's outing.
Oh, that? Here you are.
Thank you.
Nevertheless, I feel I must explain. You see, my wife...
Your wife? What kind of a story is that?
Now, Adele, my dear.
And I am not your dear. I hardly know this man. He's a friend of Mrs. Dawson, my fiancé's mother. Mrs. Dawson received word this evening that Chuck had been hurt skin diving over on St. Margaret Island. He was asking for me. Well, this man was a guest for dinner. He offered to get a boat and take me to Chuck, but he tried to drown me. He tried to push me overboard. You saw it yourself, Captain.
Now, look, I don't want to get mixed up in this. You've had your ride, and now the party's over. I'll take the wheel, Marius.
Women, Capitaine?
Stand by to make fast the bow painter.
Oui, mon capitaine. Bow painter fast, mon capitaine.
Very well. You first, Monsieur Foyer.
I was beginning to worry.
Who's that?
Mrs. Dawson, my fiancée's mother.
Did everything go off? Adele, what are you doing here?
Didn't you expect to see me come back?
Well, yes. I mean, no. I thought you'd be with Chuck.
We never went near the island. Your friend, Monsieur Foyer, tried to drown me.
What? Madame Dawson.
Oh, I'm sure you must be mistaken, my dear. Well, anyway, I have good news. They phoned me from the island. Chuck is perfectly all right, and they're bringing him home.
Oh, thank God. When will he get here?
Well, later. And maybe not until morning. So come along, my dear. You look terribly tired.
Oh, I am.
And then you go straight away to bed. I'll call you the moment Chuck gets home.
You see, Capitaine, it is necessary to humor her fantasies. Otherwise, she becomes quite violent.
Yeah. Cast off, Marius. Let's get out of this joint. We headed back to Cannes, taking a bearing on the white frosted walls of the Palm Beach Casino. But I couldn't get that girl out of my mind. She didn't sound crazy. She didn't act crazy. And there was no doubt about it, the Frenchman had been pushing her over the side. And the woman, Mrs. Dawson, whoever she was, seemed not only surprised, but furious to see the girl. I knew it was none of my business, but that's the way I am.
Back to Captain Keith.
Crept into a quiet cove a quarter mile east of the villa. And I left Marius at anchor watch and made my way back to the house along the silent, moon-dappled road. It was a big villa, surrounded by formal gardens, a rambling Mediterranean house dominated by a round watchtower which looked out to sea. There were no lights on the landward side, so I made my way through the shadows toward the water and soon heard the low buzz of voices. There they were. Mrs. Dawson and Jacques standing on the terrace which faced the sea.
You were highly regarded.
There I was, not 6 feet away from them,
heaven knows,
hidden behind an acacia bush.
All that you say is true, madame.
Well, then perhaps you can explain your failure.
All would have gone well had it not been for that American boat captain.
Oh, excuses.
What could I do? He heard her scream.
You shouldn't have permitted her to scream.
Madame Dawson, have you ever killed anyone?
Of course not.
Then you are in no position to criticize me.
That girl must not marry my son.
I understand that.
Tonight. You said you'd do it tonight.
I tried, madame.
Well, there is still time. Chuck's over in Monte Carlo at the casino. Where that boy loves roulette, he won't be home until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. You still have time.
But here in the villa, this is a different matter than a drowning at sea.
You're a most uninventive assassin, monsieur.
Madame?
Look, her bedroom in the tower. You see that balcony up there?
Yes.
That's her room. The only one in the tower that's occupied. and looked beneath the balcony, a sheer drop of nearly 100 feet to the rocks below. In the morning, her body will be found on the rocks. An unfortunate accident.
I see, madame. And may I say one thing?
Yes, sir.
You should be in my line of work. You would do well at it.
I sneaked away on this high note of compliment and returned silently to the road. As I ran back to the Mockingbird, I worked out a rough plan for the rescue of the fair maiden from her dungeon tower. The light in the tower room was still on. Marius eased the Mockingbird toward the base of the tower until its prow crunched into the sand between a couple of rocks.
You're going to climb that, Steve?
It doesn't look too bad, Marius. Up that bank to the terrace, then up those vines if they're strong enough, and onto the roof. After all, that tower was never designed to repel invaders. It was built to look old and quaint and... You see those stones sticking out of the stucco every now and again?
Yes.
They look close enough to be useful as a ladder. All right, give me the coil of rope.
There you are.
You know what you have to do down here.
I know.
Oh, the light just went out. I got to get moving.
Oh, sure, Steve.
Yeah. Well, thanks. First part of the climb was a cinch. And the vines were old and sturdy, but the whimsical architect who embedded those picturesque stones in the tower had never intended them to serve as a ladder. A couple of times, I was sure that they would find my body along with Adele's on the rocks in the morning. But I finally made the balcony, scratched, bleeding, and scared. But not half as scared as Adele.
Who's there? Who is it?
Steve.
What are you doing?
Shh, don't talk. Just listen. We haven't got much time. Listen to me. Chuck is all right.
Oh, thank God.
He isn't hurt. He's at the casino at Monte Carlo right now.
I don't...
You were right about the Frenchman. He tried to drown you. In just a minute, he'll try to push you off the balcony.
What?
Mama doesn't want any little girls playing around her little boy. We've got to get you out of here, and there's only one way, over the balcony. Come on.
Oh, but I can't.
There's no time to get prettied up. Just come as you are. Come on. She got out of bed and came out to the balcony with me. I dropped the light line that I'd carried up with me. Marius fastened it to a coil of 3/4-inch manila, which I pulled up and looped over the railing of the balcony. Then I tied a French bowline on the end to make an improvised bosun's seat, and Adele stepped into it. I helped her over the edge of the railing, waved to Marius, and he began to lower the terrified girl to the rocks. As she disappeared from sight, I heard the door of the room open softly behind me. I turned as the Frenchman quietly entered and tiptoed over to the bed.
Adele.
Your pigeon's flown the coop,
what,
monsieur.
What?
You ought to thank me. This is the second time tonight I've kept you from committing murder. With this expression of disapproval, he went for me. I crouched, ready to flip him across the room with my best judo. But this Frenchman fought with his feet. It was I who flipped.
In just a moment, we will return for the concluding act of Suspense.
Welcome, recording star Mel Torme.
It's terrible trying to sing with a bad cold, so I always take four-way cold tablets to relieve cold miseries fast.
Good idea. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
When you catch cold, try my way. Take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve cold distress and feel better quickly.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
I was out. Not long, but long enough for him to get out on the balcony and take in Adele's improvised elevator. I shook my head groggily to see him hacking away at the rope with a pocket knife. I jumped him, yanked him away from the rope. He leaped to his feet and came at me with a knife, pushing me back against the railing. I fought off the knife hand, but it came closer and closer to my throat. And then he lost his balance, just a fraction, and just enough for me to use judo. And he flipped over the balcony and down, onto the rocks below. I
clambered over the railing and went down the rope, hand over hand. Adele stood trembling, staring at the silent heap that was the Frenchman's body. Come on, Adele. We've got to get out of here.
Could have been me. It could have been me.
That's right. Give me a hand getting her aboard, Marriott. Come along, Adele. Easy now. All right. There we are. You just lay back and rest.
Who's down there? What's going on down there?
Uh-oh, I was afraid she'd hear that scream. Fire her up, Marius.
Oui, mon capitaine.
Stop or I'll shoot!
All ahead, flank, Marius.
All ahead, flank, mon capitaine.
No wonder she hired the Frenchman to do her killing for her. She can't shoot for sour apples. Got out beyond the 3-mile limit as fast as the Mockingbird would go, which is plenty. Then we headed east toward Monte Carlo. The lights of the Boulevard des Anglais twinkled like a jeweled necklace along the waterfront of Nice. But we were safe out here, in case Mrs. Dawson had alerted the Niçoise Harbor Patrol to intercept us. Villefranche slipped astern in the dark bulk of Cape Ferrat, and then the little town of Beaulieu. At last, we rounded Cape Dyke, and there ahead rose the white facade of Monte Carlo, glittering with light. We slipped into the territorial waters of Monaco, safe from the French authorities.
Well, shall I drop the anchor, Steve?
We haven't got time. Tie up at the customs pier.
The customs?
Sure, we're not carrying contraband this time. You don't have to smuggle as pretty a girl as Adele into Monaco. We tied up at the customs dock under the astonished gaze of the guard who had emerged from his red and white striped sentry box.
Pardon, monsieur. You have a landing permit?
Not yet. We're in a hurry.
But it is required.
Yeah, I know. I'll be back. Meanwhile, you guard my boat, huh?
Monsieur.
You see, we're refugees from France.
Oh?
An affair d'amour.
Oh, well, in that case, passez, monsieur. Passez.
Our way to the terrace of the casino and stood outside looking through the windows of the Salon Privé. It was crowded, as usual, with beautifully gowned women and men in evening dress, intent upon the roulette and baccarat and chemin de fer. Adele peered anxiously, trying to find her boy in the crowd.
There's so many people, I can't find him.
Well, then let's go in.
Like this? With your peacoat over my nightdress? And in bare feet?
Oh, start a new fashion.
Oh, see.
No, I mean it.
But my hair's such a mess.
Oh, well, in that case.
Oh, there he is.
Huh?
I see him.
Where?
Over there by the big roulette table. See, the tall blonde?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll go get him. Keep an eye on her, Marius.
Soyez tranquille, Steve. We did not bring her this far to let her get away, eh?
Well. Voilà, monsieur. C'est toujours monsieur, madame.
C'est rouge, 00.
C'est rouge, 00. Voilà, monsieur. C'est toujours monsieur, madame. Rien pas plus.
Your name, Chuck Dawson?
Yeah, why?
Someone wants to see you outside on the terrace.
Oh, who?
Surprise.
What is it?
Come along.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a lot riding on 17 red.
You got a lot more riding out on the terrace, Adele.
What?
Come on.
Is it rouge? Monsieur. Monsieur Dawson. Vous avez...
I gave it. Hey, Adele.
Oh, Chuck. Chuck, I never thought I'd see you again.
Well, what is this? What's this all about?
Well, there'll be plenty of time for explanations later. The important thing is, do you want to marry this girl?
Of course I do.
Well, then I suggest you do it right away. And in Monte Carlo, where the authorities take a dim view of murdering mothers-in-law and kidnapping skippers.
Suspense. You've been listening to Moonlight Sail, written for Suspense by William N. Robeson. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of suspense. Are you out of tune due to irregularity?
Then help yourself get back in tune with Kellogg's All Brand. Pleasant, isn't it? The feeling of well-being you get when constipation from lack of bulk is no longer a worry. When harsh, irritating drug laxatives can be thrown away. Because Kellogg's All Brand is the normal, natural way to regularity. Its whole brand content gentles away constipation, supplies your system with the bulk-forming food you need for youthful regularity. And it tastes good, too. Fact is, Kellogg's All Brand is the one and only whole brand cereal that combines proved effectiveness with appetizing taste and crispness. So if you're out of tune, help yourself get back in tune as millions do with Kellogg's All Brand. A-L-L-B-R-A-N. Kellogg's All Brand.
Heard in tonight's story were Frank Thomas Jr. as Steve, Louis Van Ruten as Jacques, Joan Lazor as Adele, and Ethel Owen as Mrs. Dawson. Others included Jack Manning, Jim Bowles, Sam Raskin, and Guy Rep. A sober word about this holiday season. Keep in mind, all through the holiday season, highways are dangers. Slow, steady, and sober will see you safely through. And listen again next week when we return with Zero Hour, Ray Bradbury's chilling story of the day the children take over the world. Another tale, well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
On CBS Radio.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of December, 1959 on CBS. The story penned by William N. Robeson, who in August of that same year exited the director and producer's chair. He was also the host of the series since 1956. And that's it for this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.